The following program is brought to us by Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Phil Hareggi, Sabre Systems, Mary Nagy, the Bank of America. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Bob Morgan, the CEO and co-founder of Morgan Franklin, Shiv Krishnan, chairman and CEO of Indus Corp, Kevin Keller, CEO of Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, and Todd Chamberlain, president of Kenwood Golf and Country Club. I'd like to introduce to you first Bob Morgan, CEO and co-founder of Morgan Franklin. Bob, what is Morgan Franklin? What do you guys do?
Morgan Franklin is a mid-sized company headquartered here in Tysons Corner, Virginia. We're a business solutions and technology integration company working for the commercial and government sectors.
How large, how small is this organization?
It's growing, and we're pushing about 300 people. Hope to do about $60 million in revenue this year.
Mm-hmm. And how many founders are there of the company, and when was it founded?
The company was founded in 1998 by three of us, myself, Ron Morgan, my younger brother, and Rob Franklin.
So the three of you started the business, and I assume that you guys do the same thing?
No, absolutely not. Even when we started the company, we realized we all had different strengths and weaknesses, and that kind of dictated what roles we have.
What do you mean? I mean, you didn't say one person does this, one person does that, one person does this. You sort of like figured it out because of your personalities?
It's part personality and part skill set. Myself, I was more of a externally focused person, developing business, sales, marketing, more strategic. Rob Franklin, more of an operations person. He runs one of our business groups. And then my brother, Ron, we pulled him out of PwC. He was an accountant. So originally he joined us as CFO, but has since transitioned to run our commercial business practice. So it is personality plus
some of the
backgrounds and education.
Now, this organization is evidently a successful organization. It's 12 years old, 300 people, $65 million in revenue. Have your roles changed through the course of time?
Well, they've evolved. And like I said, Ron started out as CFO, and he's since moved over to run our commercial business practice because he found out he had more of an entrepreneurial spirit rather than just being CFO. So they've transitioned and changed over time and evolved. My role has been pretty steady.
Have they evolved because now you guys are doing what you want, or have they evolved because you had to do what the business needed?
A mixture of both. The business has definitely evolved and changed, and we've transitioned from a small business to a mid-sized business. And interestingly, you asked that question about 2 years ago. We asked the three of us, where do we get our positive energy from? And that actually led to us restructuring the company and putting Rob and Ron in different positions and different responsibilities than what they had previously.
Does that mean that they get to do exactly what they want and they have fun as the owner of the business?
I wish. No, none of us actually get to do exactly what we want. I mean, there's always good things and bad things, and owning your own business, there's a lot of perks and there's a lot of flexibility, but at the end of the day, we're the ones making payroll, and we have to make sure things get done.
And when you mentioned the positive energy, so maybe if people sort of generally enjoy what they're doing, they tend to do a better job at it longer term?
Absolutely.
Even the founders?
Even the founders. Ron was in a position where he really didn't enjoy as much, handling the finance and accounting, the HR. He really enjoyed interfacing with clients and developing business. So, for the better of the organization and him personally, we made the change.
Now, where are you from originally?
South Central Pennsylvania. I grew up in the middle of farm country.
You grew up on a farm?
Grew up on a farm, a 300-acre dairy farm.
Did you work on the farm?
Absolutely.
What was that like? What kind of stuff did you, how young were you when you were working on the farm?
I started working on the farm probably when I was 12, baling hay, unloading hay wagons. Eventually grew up and took more of an active role on the farm, doing all things, milking cows, baling hay.
But, I guess you were lucky because you had a lot of help, and you could only, if you wanted to get off Saturdays and Sundays, and you didn't have to get up early or anything, right?
Yeah, well, that's, there's a reason why I'm sitting here today.
What do you mean?
Working on a farm, a dairy farm, is a 7-day-a-week job from 4 in the morning till, you know, 8 o'clock at night with very little flexibility.
So. Mm-hmm. So why are you sitting here today? What do you mean growing up on the farm had an effect on what you're doing today? What do you mean?
I had an opportunity. My family and grandparents, particularly who owned the farm, wanted me to go to college. But I had a choice to make, continuing my education, get an electrical engineering degree, or take over the family farm. And, you know, that question about positive energy, my grandfather sat me down and said, look, this was my business. This is what I enjoyed doing. You should really look at what makes you happy, makes where you get your positive energy, and that's where you should go. And so I continued on with get my electrical engineering degree and ultimately end up starting a company.
Wait a minute. You were handed a business, and you decided to go to college and to go start something completely different. What are you, wacko or something?
Probably at the time, yeah. You know, I think... when you have businesses, and to include mine, you know, I'm encouraging my sons to say, you know, if you want to do something different, you should really go after what you're passionate about. And I learned that from my grandfather.
Mm-hmm. Do you have other brothers and sisters?
I have two older sisters, and then my younger brother Ron, who works with me.
Now, are they? So you're it's just you and your brother in the business. The siblings, other siblings, didn't get involved in the business.
No, the other my two older sisters were off doing their own thing. One's a school teacher in Pennsylvania, and the other one works for Harrisburg General Hospital. So
growing up, did you think that your brother and you would actually end up, you know, working together?
We joked about it, and when you come from a family that owns their own business, and my dad had his own. Business as well, the thought was always in the back of our minds, but I got an engineering degree. I was working for the federal government. He got an accounting degree working for Penn State. We really didn't see the opportunity, to do it, and then things changed, and, you know.
How did the opportunity come up? How did the idea occur?
Over beers at Appleby? No, it came about. I had an opportunity to leave government service, and because I was in the government creating my own business practice, and I had an opportunity to leave and start a business with Rob Franklin. We realized two engineers with MBAs needed a finance guy to keep us out of trouble. So that's when the opportunity really arose, and we pulled Ron in out of PwC.
What's it like working with your brother? I mean, how do you handle, you know, disagreements and... what are family reunions like, you know, when you see your brother all the time?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And strangely enough, I mean, the business is so busy, you know, Ron and I are just like any other company. We have our roles and responsibilities. We have set meeting schedules. I mean, there's times when I don't see him for a week. So we really have tried to separate the two. We structured the company as an S-Corp with a CEO. And very early on, he realized that, you know, with my personality and the things that I was good at, that I should be the CEO. So even as a brother, he respects that, and I respect what he does. So we've been able to keep that balance pretty well.
Are you surprised by your success? Or is this something that you anticipated, that you'd be as large and as successful as you are?
Well, I pinch myself every day that we are this successful. But when we started the company, we had visions of being, you know, a decent-sized company. I think what's, you know, you never can really grasp, you know, the size and the scope, and particularly in the last 2 years with us going international and opening up a subsidiary in London, and having supporting global commercial clients around the world. It you don't really understand the magnitude and the scope and what it takes to mature a business when you start out. But you have that vision that you want it to be big.
Yeah. Are your parents aware of how successful you guys are?
Well, unfortunately, my dad's no longer with us. But my mom, she worked in the healthcare industry, and then she worked for Corning Glass. So she's pretty attuned to the business environment. She gets it, but I'm...
She's surprised?
Yeah. I think so. We come from very humble beginnings working on the dairy farm and back in Pennsylvania. I'm sure they weren't worried that we wouldn't be successful, but if you look at the magnitude of our business and what we do and who we do it for, I think that's what really surprises her.
What's the greatest lesson Dad taught you?
You know, I have a lot of lessons learned. I learned a lot from my grandfather from the farm.
Like what?
Hard work, humility. Believe it or not, when to invest in technology. What I learned from my dad was the ability to have the right balance between work and family. I would say my grandparents were probably too committed to farming unless on the family side.
How about Mom? What did Mom teach you?
Patience. Two older daughters, you know, grandparents who were heavily involved in their own farm, dad having his own business, two boys running around playing baseball all the time. Patience.
I got you. What is the website address for Morgan Franklin?
www.morganfranklin.com.
We've been speaking with Bob Morgan, the CEO and co-founder of Morgan Franklin, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul from the Potomac Companies bringing you your Business Spotlight. Today, joining us, we have
Richard Stang.
And Richard Stang, who are you with?
The Leon and Stang CPAs.
CPAs, okay. So do you do private? Do you do government? What kind of CPA work are you?
It's a diverse firm. We do auto work with a number of different industries here in the area, and we have a large individual practice, tax, as well as working with small businesses.
Do you have a particular specialty? Is there a type of business that suits your firm best?
Professional service firms, some government contractors as well, and again, work with a large, diverse base of individual clients.
Now, are you in D.C.? Are you in the whole market area of the nation's capital?
Our office is based in Gaithersburg, but we do work throughout the metropolitan area.
And obviously, your name is on the door, but what is your role there?
I'm one of the founding partners. I specialize in the tax and small business area.
Okay, and how many people do you have working for you?
35 people right now.
So mostly CPAs?
CPAs and also a number of aspiring CPAs as well.
And what makes your firm special? What makes you stand out from other CPA firms?
What we've been told, what we work on very, very hard is we take a lot of information our clients tell us. We speak it in their language as opposed to our language, so we have a way of bringing it across to them in language they can understand.
And Richard, how can people reach you? What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Probably the best is to check our website, which is www.deleonandstang.com.
Spell that for me.
DeleonandStang.com.
Again, this is Paul with the Business Spotlight. Have a great day.
Would you like to host the Executive Leaders Radio Show? Do you have a broad business background and an intuitive people instinct to help draw from our guest CEOs what makes them tick in an easily understood and concise manner? If you have a broad business background and an intuitive people instinct to help draw from our CEO guests what makes them tick in an easily understood and concise manner, and want to host the Executive Leaders Radio Show, simply email a 12-minute audition to info@executiveleadersradio.com. That's info@executiveleadersradio.com. Email us on audition and we'll be certain to get back to you. And your opinion counts. What do you think of our existing hosts on Executive Leaders Radio? What could our hosts do better? We really want to know what our hosts could do better. Please email info@executiveleadersradio.com and tell us what our hosts could do better, because your opinion really does count. info@executiveleadersradio.com. Let us know what you think of our executive leaders or if you're interested in hosting our show. And you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Philip Reggie Saber Systems and Mary Nagy of the Bank of America. I'd like to introduce to you Shiv Krishnan. Shiv is the chairman and CEO of Indus Corp. What is Indus Corp? What do you guys do?
We are, in a very simple terms, a federal information technology company. We help federal government customers in solving information technology challenges that they have, using the information that they have to help make decisions. So we build software, protect networks. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
How large or how small is this organization?
We are about 500 employees, and we are close to $100 million in revenues.
500 employees, $100 million in revenue, and how'd you get a job with this company?
I started it in 1993.
You started the company?
Yes, I did.
Where did the venture capital come from to start the company?
From my credit cards and my wife working, putting bread on the table when I'm not paid.
Wait a minute. You started a company. It's doing $100 million with 500 employees with your credit cards while your wife was working.
Absolutely.
Why'd your wife have to work if you started your own business? I don't understand that.
When you start the business,
yeah,
you don't have customers, and you don't have money coming in, you don't have revenues, and it takes a while, sometimes 6 months, sometimes 2 years. And the key to success is survival and being able to be in business until you have customers that are willing to pay for your services.
Wait a minute, what do you know about survival? You grew up in some fancy-dancy surroundings here in the United States, didn't you?
I was talking about talking to one of the other people on the show, mm-hmm. and he grew up on a farm, but I did not. I mm-hmm. grew up in a big city in India, and I came here in 1979, right after college in India, to go to grad school. I grew up in Madras, where...
So you came to the United States, I guess you came in for business school.
No, actually, I went to engineering school. I had a bachelor's in chemical engineering.
You came to engineering school, and yet you started a business that's 500 people and $100 million. Well, what did you know about business? Did they teach you anything about business in India? Isn't that like a completely different society?
Yes and no.
What do you mean?
It's an older society, but business is thriving in India. But when I was growing up, one of my early role models was this friend of mine whose family owned the largest newspaper chain in India. His grandfather, he was delivering papers when he was very young, and he built this largest newspaper chain. And he was in his maybe 70s at the time. Mm-hmm. So that hit a big spark in me in terms of if you work hard and if you have focus, you can do whatever you want to do.
Any other entrepreneurial, hopeful entrepreneurial influences when you were in India?
When I was in college, about the fourth year of my undergraduate program there, I had the opportunity to lead a seminar bringing in other industrialists who had built businesses, companies, for an entrepreneurship forum to help educate all of the kids going to college there. And that had an influence, I can see, not directly, but indirectly.
Because you gain confidence listening to successful entrepreneurs talk about how they did it.
Exactly.
Hmm. Was it as easy as they made it sound?
They did not tell us that it's very easy. They said that you have to focus on what your goal is and work very, very hard at it. And sometimes you will not succeed. And you should be prepared to accept that, too.
All right.
So that's a great lesson.
This business, it's $100 million. It's a substantial business. How far is up?
I used to joke with people saying that the government spends about $130 billion on information technology alone, and if I get 1% market share, I'll be very happy. Mm-hmm. But the sad truth of the matter is 1% market share, which is $1.3 billion company, it is still a tiny company in that government marketplace.
Mm-hmm. Philip?
You know, it's funny, Shay. I mean, we're in the same industry, but growing up in India and having sort of a perception of what life in the United States was like, and when you moved to the United States, was there anything that you found surprising in terms of the reality of living in the United States versus the outside perspective?
Oh, absolutely, yes. When I grew up, I was in a very sheltered environment, even though I grew up in a city. I'd never been on a plane. The first time I got on a plane was when I boarded a plane to come to the United States. I ended up here about a day late because of delays and everything. Growing up in a city where 75 degrees was the coldest day, going to school in upstate New York where 75 is the hottest day. So survival was on my mind when I came here. But the one thing that really opened up my mind and eyes were the welcoming attitude of people in the United States. And it's a country dictated by law, the rule of law, and not by who do you know, where, when to get started in business. So if you have a goal in mind, if you want to do something, and if you understand what the rules are and play by those rules, there is absolutely an opportunity and a chance for you to succeed. And that is huge in building entrepreneurs in this country.
Mm-hmm. Shiv, do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have four sisters, all younger.
Are they here in this country?
And all four of them are here. They came here after their trailblazing brother, and they're all, three of them are on the East Coast and one on the West Coast.
So, Shiv, you had an engineering, a chemical engineering degree, so I'm going to assume that you had a technical career. So what was the impetus that made you think that you'd be successful in striking out on your own? Is it the rule thing that you learned the rules of federal contracting, or what was it? What was it that?
In fact, I started my career, when I completed my master's, I applied to, believe it or not, 400 companies, and in those days people were not comfortable about hiring people with immigration visas and all of that. Today it's all, I mean, you don't even think about it. People interview from here, employees in China or India or Philippines or wherever they are. I got my first break working for the Commonwealth of Virginia as an air pollution control engineer, doing mathematical modeling to see where the environmental impacts are of all this pollution. So I got an interest in developing software and writing code, and automated all of that process. And that's how I got a start. And then I moved to the Washington area in 1983. Working for a company that still exists today, the intersection of 395 and 495. It's called Versar. Versar is an environmental consulting firm to the government. That's where I learned that there is a way to do business with the government. Mm-hmm. And as I moved up, mm-hmm. I learned all the tricks of the trade and
I
got into it.
I got a question. Your wife, who you forced to work so that you could go start this business.
Yeah.
how did she feel about working while you were playing with the start of a business?
Herb, it's a great question. 1993.
I thought Marian was going to ask the question.
Okay.
I was waiting. Yes.
1993. We were living the American dream, a nice colonial in suburbia, two cars, except for the dog. We had one daughter and another one was mm-hmm. on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been talking about doing the business, and my wife Mina said that you better do it now,
right?
Because it's going to be tougher when we have another baby.
I gotcha.
And she said, mm-hmm. I'll continue working 6 months, and then mm-hmm. you try it.
Tell me a little bit about Dad and your grandfather. What kind of influence did your father and your grandfather have on you?
My father was in the financial services business. He was a CFO for a large manufacturing company in mm-hmm. India.
What did you learn from him?
Working hard, and he moved to different places, small places in India mm-hmm. where they were putting up these humongous mm-hmm. power plants, and he was managing those.
How about that? How about Grandpa? What did your Grandpa
gave about 60 years of his life to educate poor children in India. That had a huge influence in me.
How?
And that comes back to how I give back to the community. We are focused on education.
Wait, hold on. You're building a business. It's a $100 million business, and you want to grow it further. In fact, you said a billion-dollar company is not a large one.
Absolutely, yeah.
What are you talking about giving back? How do you? What are you talking about?
Giving back is what I'm doing today. You know,
building a business. What do you mean giving back?
If people can learn from my experience, and then there is a spark that, like what I had from the.
Aren't you spending 170% of your time building this business?
250, actually.
Yeah.
If you say 8 hours a day. 7 days a week.
Back. How are you giving back? What do you mean?
I sit on the board of George Mason School of Management. I sit on the board of continuing education for University of Virginia.
Do you also write checks?
And I'm the chairman of the Small and Emerging Contractors Advisory Forum, which is a group of small and emerging companies that are involved in the government business.
Gotcha.
And as Marianne knows, I was the chairman of ACG, which is a mergers and acquisitions group.
What is the website address for Indus Corp?
It's www.induscorp.com.
We've been speaking with Shiv Krishnan, Chairman and CEO of Indus Corp, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Oh, please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Hi, this is Paul from the Potomac Companies bringing you your Business Spotlight. Joining us today, we have...
Alan Snyder.
And Alan Snyder, who are you with?
Boxtone.
Boxtone. What does Boxtone do?
So we're a software products company, and we make software that makes mobility run better.
Mobility run better. Translate that for me.
So what that means is large and small companies that have large deployments of smartphones, which are growing pretty rapidly, we help them operate them such that they do it at the lowest possible cost with the best possible service.
So you're the one that keeps my son up at night on his BlackBerry?
I don't keep him up at night, but I make sure it's available.
Okay. And where are you guys located? Are you here in the D.C. market?
We're up in Columbia, Maryland.
Really? How big is your firm?
So we're about 70 people.
That's excellent. How long have you guys been doing this?
We've really been focused on this since 2005.
And what's your role with the company?
I'm the CEO.
And do you do some of the technical work too, or are you just focusing on the business end?
My real focus is really to look at the long-term strategy and then position the company for growth.
And who are your clients? Do you sell to the phone companies, to end users? Who's your market with?
We sell, it's really global 1,000, so it's going to be folks like Citigroup, Veterans Administration. It's really enterprise and government entities that consider mobility to be very important to running their business.
So this way, when people are running around at meetings all over the country, they can keep track of their staff through you.
We want to make sure they stay connected, absolutely.
How do people reach you, Andy?
Best way is on our website, boxtone.com.
Spell that for us.
BOXTONE.com.
Just like I said, again, this has been Paul with your Business Spotlight. Till next time, have a great day.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, fellow Reggie Saber Systems, Marianne Nagy, the Bank of America. I'd like to introduce to you Kevin Keller. Kevin is the CEO of the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards. Kevin, what is this Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards? What do you guys do?
Well, Herb, CFP Board is the standard setting and certifying body for the financial planning profession. And so we determine who is eligible to attain the Certified Financial Planner, or CFP designation, and then we have ongoing ethical and continuing education standards of who is eligible to retain that over time.
How large or how small is this organization?
CFP Board has 55 staff members working in downtown Washington, and we have certified and currently have over 61,000 CFP professionals around the country.
All right. Now, there's a lot of... There's a lot of different designations that are out there. What's special about the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards designation?
CFP board, or CFP, is really the gold standard, and it's that we consider that, and I think the financial services press, the personal financial services press, like Michelle Singletary and in the Washington Post and others, consider that both for competency reasons. It's the equivalent of 15 graduate level hours of training to be eligible to sit for a two-day exam, 285 questions, and then we require 3 years of experience and a very strict ethical standard that we actually enforce. We have a whole team of securities attorneys and others who investigate cases of people who are accused of potentially violating our ethical standards.
So you establish a designation, a standard that people educate themselves into and then test themselves against. And in order for these folks to keep the designation, they have to behave a certain way, as well as practice a certain way. Am I right or wrong about that?
That's
stuff?
Right. And over 61,000 continue to do that. Our retention rate is really 98% year over year. And the reason that is because the consumer finance press, as I mentioned, understands the value of it and write about it in a very positive and affirmative way. Regulators recognize the CFP designation, and more we're working to make sure that the American public also understands CFP certification.
Cool. Now, I assume that mom and dad were involved in the financial planning industry for you to be this deeply involved in this association?
No, that's not the case at all, Herb. I grew up on a farm, really.
A farm?
In the Midwest. A farm.
A farm in the Midwest.
A working family farm, not a gentleman's farm, but a working family farm outside of Columbus, Ohio.
All right. So how young were you when you began working on this farm, and what kind of stuff did you do? I guess you got to drive the tractor and have fun.
All of those things. I have great admiration for having grown up on the farm, but I figured out at a very early age that there maybe was an easier way of making a living than baling hay.
Oh, so you really, it was really, and this was as a young boy you were involved doing this stuff?
It is. Again, a great legacy, an appreciation for hard work, and the understanding that it won't kill you. And I think it served me well long past
what
having
do you
left
mean?
At 18.
What do you mean? How did that serve
well,
you?
As I said, you know, there's just by nature of growing up on the farm, a lot of hard physical labor. But I think that carries over into the work that we do at CFP Board from a standpoint that it's that hard work that makes you successful.
Mm-hmm. The CF, the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, you're the CEO, and I assume this is a nonprofit. And I guess the advantage of having to run a nonprofit as opposed to a for-profit is it's a lot easier, right?
Well, no, actually. And a lot of people, you know, in the Washington, D.C. market, at least, nonprofits represent the third largest employer force. Having said that, many people think, well, if you couldn't get a real job, then you could go run a nonprofit. We look, or at least my personal philosophy is, that nonprofit is a tax status. It's not really a business model. We have 55 employees. I care about them very much. They're having children, they're growing families, and we need to make sure that we continue to be financially viable, not only for the staff, but for the organization at large.
Hmm. Yeah, tell us a little bit of how you got to Washington, D.C. Did you end up leaving the farm and become a certified financial planner? Did you
go to
get into the trades
school,
the association school, or so what?
What happened?
So how'd you leave the farm in, I'll say, I know it was in Ohio, but I keep thinking Dorothy in Kansas.
Sure. I actually worked a summer in Washington as a summer intern during college, and so I realized that this was, if you're going to work in
this,
the
this was Oz,
right? This was Oz, and it certainly was better than the options of staying back on the farm. So that was, it was really a college internship, and I got back here as soon as I could. I saw the opportunity that the Washington market presented and took advantage of it.
So you became drawn to trade associations, you know, that
I did, because you're essentially running a business. You have to create a value proposition. You have to, but it's all aspects. If you think about it, a not-for-profit has all the various components. You have marketing, revenue generation, controlling expenses. It's essentially running a business, and that's how I look at what we do at CFP Board. We've got a great staff of folks at CFP Board. The organization was in Denver. My first job 3 years ago when I joined was to move the organization from Denver to D.C., so we've hired over 55 people in the course of 3 years, and again, build a great team.
Are you a certified financial planner, or how did you end up being with this organization?
That's a great question. I'm a certified association executive, which is the professional designation for what I do. We have a number of certified financial planners on our staff, and certainly hundreds of volunteers who are certified financial planners that bring expertise. So I, before joining CFP Board, worked for an association of corporate finance and treasury professionals, and that was the entree to CFP Board.
Hey, Kevin, you know, you mentioned the 55 people that you brought in over 3 years, and it sounds like, you know, you're very involved, maybe not involved, but certainly invested and interested in their livelihood. Can you compare maybe the culture of growing up on a family farm and, you know, with a crew, with farmhands, and maybe, you know, maybe the type of culture, you know, that maybe you like to foster, you know, in, sure. in running.
Well, you're full of good questions today, Philip.
It's nice having you around.
No, it's good. Well, when you speak of farmhands, my brother and I were the farmhands, so I'm not sure that there was as much thought given to the culture.
Tin Man, no.
But the issue of culture is very important. I believe, especially since we built this, we moved to CFP Board, we hired almost all new staff. I believe that a CEO and a leader has a very definite responsibility to define the culture and then work very hard to maintain that culture. And that doesn't always mean it's easy, but certainly as a leader, I think that's one of the most important responsibilities that a CEO brings to the job.
So do you have a mission statement? And how do you rally people around, say, your mission?
Sure. The mission of CFP Board is to benefit the public by granting the CFP certification and upholding it. But with the staff, we really have defined core values for the staff, and we work very hard. They're aspirational, and we don't always meet them, but we certainly talk about them a lot. We include and build it into our performance appraisal process and into our incentive compensation process as well.
What do you like about being the CEO, and why did they want you as the CEO?
I'm not sure I know why they wanted me. I had experience running a certification program. I also had experience, significant not-for-profit experience. The part that I like about the job, and people say, I like working with financial planners. I very much enjoy that. But a big part of it is helping the staff, the people that I work with, grow personally and professionally. And so I hope, however long those 55 people stay with us, I hope that when they leave CFP Board, they're able to jump off on their career at a higher plateau than they would have if they had worked someplace mm-hmm. else.
You really enjoy developing the team.
Indeed, that's what makes.
How young were you when that characteristic began to shine through? Was it in grade school? Was it what happened? When did you realize that you really enjoyed pulling the team together and making sure that things worked?
I'm not sure I can point to any definitive time, or there's no real kind of seminal moment where I'm like, gee, this was fun. I was involved in volunteer efforts and organizations, but I'm not so sure that it. I think it just more evolved over time.
The course of time. Mm-hmm. What's the future of this organization? Is there less of a need for it tomorrow, or more of a need for the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards tomorrow?
We think there's a great need for the Board of Standards. Financial planning as a profession, or even as a function, is not regulated. Anybody essentially in the country, with the exception of maybe one or two states, can go out and hang up a a shingle and call themselves a financial planner. And so we moved to Washington to play a larger role in the regulatory arena and have been advocating and believe there would be value in having a financial planner oversight board with federal acknowledgement and that would set baseline standards, perhaps not as high and certainly not as high as CFP's standards, but baseline standards and competency requirements for people who call themselves financial planners.
Well, and what is the website address for the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards?
Herb, it's www.cfp.net.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Kevin Keller, CEO of the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. And we'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. Like to host the Executive Leaders Radio Show? Do you have a broad business background and an intuitive people instinct to help draw from our guest CEOs what makes them tick in an easily understood and concise manner? If you have a broad business background and an intuitive people instinct to help draw from our CEO guests what makes them tick in an easily understood and concise manner, and want to host the Executive Leaders Radio Show, simply email a 12-minute audition to info@executiveleadersradio.com. That's info@executiveleadersradio.com. Email us an audition and we'll be certain to get back to you. And your opinion counts. What do you think of our existing hosts on Executive Leaders Radio? What could our hosts do better? We really want to know what our hosts could do better. Please email info@executiveleadersradio.com and tell us what our hosts could do better, because your opinion really does count. info@executiveleadersradio.com. Let us know what you think of our executive leaders or if you're interested in hosting our show. Back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is Herb Cohen, your host, with my co-host, fellow Reggie Saber Systems and Marian Nagy, the Bank of America. I'd like to introduce to you Todd Chamberlain. Todd is the president of the Kenwood Golf and Country Club. Todd, what is the Kenwood Golf and Country Club? What do you guys do? How large or small, and so on and so forth?
All right. Kenwood Golf and Country Club is a family country club. It is a privately owned country club. My family owns it. We opened in 1928. We have 1,400 members, and just a good
1,400 members.
Yes.
And what kind of benefits and what kind of structures and facilities do you folks have?
Okay, our facilities, we have an 18-hole golf course. We have a 50-room hotel. We have an 8-lane bowling alley. We have 3 huge pools, 1 indoor. We have the best fitness center in the entire country right now that a country club has. It's 35,000 square feet. We have full banquet facilities. We have 19 tennis courts, 4 of which indoor. The list goes on.
And how many employees?
In full season, we have 160 employees.
And what kind of revenue you guys doing? What kind of budget are you working with?
We just did $14 million in 2009.
Well, I'm jealous. I mean, it must be great being the president of a country club. You can go in and play tennis, and you can go hang out and talk to people, and then you can go eat. It's like you must have a really easy life.
It's funny you say that, because I have 4 sisters and 1 brother and 1 half brother, and none of them wanted to work at the country club, and I didn't want to work at the country club either. And I was a senior in college, and my dad said, "Do you want to run the country club?" And I said, "Give me time to think about it." It took me 6 months, and I said, "Dad, let me go travel for a year by myself, and when I come back, then I'll start working at the club for you."
Well, what do you have to do? I mean, you get long lunches, and you get to go play tennis and stuff. I mean, what does the president of Kenwood Golf and Country Club have to do?
I started there. My jobs entail now just making sure I'm responsible for the members' happiness. Whatever goes wrong, they email me, they call me, they walk into my office. I am, the buck stops with me when it comes to their happiness and their fulfillment at the club.
And you have 1,400 members.
Correct.
Okay, and everybody has an opinion regarding the food and the tennis courts and... Well, you're like the master complaint department.
Well, I am, and that's where my country club is kind of different from all the other ones. Our membership is fantastic. They are the good, hardworking people. They understand the value. The country club has increased so much in value in the past 6 years. The complaints are at a minimal, and actually it is joyous for me to walk around because, if anything, they're congratulating me on the job I'm doing there.
So wait a minute. Really, I was good. Being a little funny earlier when I said you must be able to go play tennis and have long lunches. You're telling me you really do enjoy your job with 1,400 people yelling and screaming at you all the time?
Absolutely. I see it as a challenge to me. One time I was scooping ice cream at a banquet for this little girl, and a member came up to me and said, "You shouldn't be doing that." And I said, "Hey, that's my job to make sure even this little girl gets her ice cream." So,
But how about developing, like, you know, you've had to develop the tennis courts, develop the fitness center. I mean, there's financing, there's marketing, there's management, there's... Don't you have to do all that other stuff as well?
Yes, and I thank God I have the most wonderful staff in the world that does that. Steve Smith, Bill Worrell, Hassan, our catering department, Debbie and Renee, everybody just does an amazing job, and I wouldn't be there without them.
I guess it was probably pretty easy. I mean, you grew up with your dad, so you guys knew each other well. And I guess it was pretty easy. You know, he said to you, "Look, this is what you have to do. You're going to sit in this office. I'm going to give you a telephone. You can just tell people what you want them to do." Right?
Well, growing up, it was funny because it was survival in our family. And it was survival of the fittest. So no one really wanted to, I shouldn't say this on the radio, but no one really wanted to work with my dad growing up. And when it came time for me to say yes, it was with some hesitation.
Well, you and your dad have exactly the same strengths. I mean, he's done things for the business, the same kind of stuff you're going to do. You're his son. You guys do things the same way, right?
No, we have very different philosophies. His philosophy of the club was more of survival mode, and mine was more of a thriving mode. And that really affected the membership when I came in. They saw me making improvements to the club, and they weren't used to it. And I kept raising the bar higher and higher. And it made me uncomfortable. It made my dad uncomfortable. So we made sure that we could still work together in this uncomfortable kind of, hey, where is this country club going business?
So as you began to make changes, you really needed dad's confidence that you weren't going to go bankrupt this thing and destroy what he had spent all this time creating, especially considering the fact your grandfather's the one who started it.
Correct. My philosophy of doing things were extremely different from my dad's.
I guess the problem was also with all those existing members, they were probably coming to him and saying, "You know, your kid's cuckoo here. What are you doing bringing him in?"
It's funny because I was getting hate mail when I wanted to build this $11 million fitness center on the club.
Oh, good.
And it took me 3 years to convince my dad that this is a good thing for the club. Fitness is not a fad. We should do this. And 3 years later, he finally said, "Okay, we will borrow the money to do it."
You had to borrow $11 million?
No, we only had to borrow $5.5 million.
So what's happened? Have you bankrupted the family yet?
Absolutely not. It's been the reason. 2009 was a tough year for a lot of country clubs, but Kenwood was thriving in this period. And I think people are staying at the club for one of the reasons it's a great family club, but this fitness center is keeping people here.
Holy moly. I mean, $5.5 million, you guys had to go write a check? That's a lot of money.
Correct. It's a lot of money, but you got to be able to look forward and see where the club's future is.
That's amazing, that risk. I mean, we've had entrepreneurs on that started $100 million businesses with 500 employees that started off with their credit cards. You had to write a check for $5.5 million?
Correct.
That's a lot of risk.
It's a lot of risk, but...
If I was your father, I'd be arguing with you also. I'd be worried.
We had our fair share of
arguments. What my kid doing to my business?
But luckily, he has been very supportive of me. He knows that I'm an entrepreneur. He knows that I can see value where a lot of other people can't, and he lets me go. He takes the reins off me and lets me explore.
If your grandfather was around nowadays, what do you think? How do you think he would feel if he saw what you had done to his country club?
At first, I think he'd want to shoot me, but after the result, I think he'd want to hug me.
Why?
Just because it was so forward-thinking, and it was so risk-taking, and that's who he was. He was a land developer. He was a very risk-taking person, and I think he would have been very proud of me to take such a risk.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're talking about the men in the family, Grandpa and Dad. So what did your mom teach you?
My mom taught me... What did she teach me?
Oh, come on, you better. Come on.
Growing up, my mom taught me that it was important. I don't know how to answer this question fairly. We were in survival mode growing up. So I guess she taught me survival skills growing up. That's the best way to put it.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have four sisters, one brother, and one adopted brother.
And where are you in the pecking order?
I am fourth. I'm fourth from the top.
Uh-huh. What did they think of you when you were a kid?
Well, it's funny now because my survival skills I learned growing up are actually helping me now.
What do you mean?
I used to be teased. There was a note on the refrigerator door, kind of giving everyone their roles in the family, and mine was to go count my pennies upstairs. I mowed lawns at a very young age, and I loved collecting $100 bills, and I would pin them up on my wall, and I would just stare at them, and I loved counting my money. So it was a joke in the family, Todd, go count your pennies.
Todd, how young were you when you started making money?
I was probably 9 years old, and I started out mowing a lawn with the guy across the street. Mm-hmm. And finally, I was asking him if I could mow the lawn for him, and he could keep the money. And then my dad would say, okay, you can use my lawnmower if you mow my lawn for free. So I'd mow his lawns, and I'd go out and just start mowing the neighbor's lawns. And by college time, I had 70 lawns of my own, and I was just going crazy in the lawn business.
So you're a pretty, one would call it passionate, another one could call it obsessive individual, huh?
Yes.
I gotcha. How old are you now?
I'm 39.
39. So what's the future hold for you?
The future holds, I have about, it seems like Kenwood, on the business wise, Kenwood is going to go through, the transformation is still happening. We are going to build and make that place the best place around. Mm-hmm. Family wise, I'm a huge family man. I have three kids. I love them dearly. And I want to stay connected with them. Mm-hmm. And that is my primary goal till they're out of the house, is to teach them the values and the things that I had to learn the hard way.
Todd, what is the website address for the Kenwood Golf and Country Club?
It's kenwoodcc.net.
Let me have that one more time.
kenwoodcc.net.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Todd Chamberlain, president of the Kenwood Golf and Country Club, as well as we've had the opportunity of speaking with Bob Morgan, CEO and co-founder of Morgan Franklin, Shiv Krishnan, chairman and CEO of Indus Corp, Kevin Keller, CEO of the Certified Financial Planner Board of Sinners, and again, most recently, Todd Chamberlain, president of Kenwood Golf and Country Club here on Executive Leaders Radio. I'd like to thank my co-host, Phil Oregi, Sabre Systems, and Mary Negi, the Bank of America, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to us by Executive Leaders Radio.